This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. In a last-minute deal, Hamas freed 8 Israeli hostages Thursday in exchange for Israel's release of more Palestinian prisoners. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
The latest exchange extends the ceasefire in Gaza by another day. But any further renewal of the truce, now in its 7th day, could prove more daunting because Hamas is expected to set a higher exchange rate for many of the remaining hostages. International pressure has mounted for the truce to continue. Hamas's deadly attack on October 7th has been followed by Israeli bombardment and a ground campaign. Thousands of Palestinians in Gaza have been killed, and more than three-quarters of the population of 2.3 million have been uprooted. I'm Norman Hall.
The son of a Hamas leader who spied on the powerful Palestinian Islamist movement for Israel called on Thursday for the death penalty for all Hamas fighters currently held by Israel prisons.
Any harm that happens to the hostages, Israel must execute top Hamas leaders with no exceptions.
In a Zoom interview broadcast by the Israeli government, Mossab Hassan Youssef said that the death penalty should apply to all Hamas militants, including his father, Sheikh Hassan Youssef. Youssef secretly converted to Christianity and helped the Shin Bet Security Service in the late 1990s and early 2000s when Hamas waged suicide bomb campaigns against Israel. He was codenamed Green Prince after the Islamist color and the fact that his father, Hassan Youssef, led Hamas in the West Bank. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events at our website, 24 hours a day at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Polarizing political figure Henry Kissinger died at 100 years old on Wednesday. Here's VOA's Cindy Sain.
Kissinger established his own brand of realpolitik, basing foreign policy on what he said were practical rather than moral decisions. Kissinger did not reveal the 1969 U.S. aerial bombings of Cambodia and Laos to Congress, which escalated the Vietnam War. But it was also Kissinger who met dozens of times with Lê Duc Tho of North Vietnam to negotiate an end to the war, for which they were both awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Russia's Supreme Court has effectively outlawed LGBTQ plus activism in the most dramatic step against advocates of gay, lesbian, and transgender rights in the increasingly conservative country. Ruling Thursday in response to a lawsuit filed by the Justice Ministry, the court labeled what it called the LGBTQ plus movement operating in Russia as an extremist organization and banned it. The ruling is the latest step in a crackdown on LGBTQ plus rights in Russia under President Vladimir Putin. The Justice Ministry brought the lawsuit, arguing that authorities had identified, quote, signs and manifestations of an extremist nature by an LGBTQ plus movement in Russia that incited, quote, social and religious discord, although it offered no details. Amnesty International called the ruling, quote, shameful and absurd. The House could vote Friday to expel New York Republican George Santos, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The House Ethics Committee says it has amassed overwhelming evidence of lawbreaking by Santos that has been sent to the Justice Department.
I've said this many times. I'm fighting to defend myself and to dispel each and every accusation as soon as I have the opportunity.
Santos says he will not resign, and the House would be voting to expel based on allegations.
If I leave, they win. If I leave, the bullies take place. This is bullying.
Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries calls Santos
a joke and an embarrassment and a serial fraudster.
Jeffries says Republicans knew what Santos was doing and coddled him
and play footsie with him for the better part of the year. Why? Because House Republicans needed George Santos's vote.
This would be the third expulsion effort of Santos's short tenure in Congress. Ed Donahue, Washington.
U.S. authorities say a Mexican drug cartel was so bold in operating frauds targeting elderly Americans that the gang's operators posed as U.S. Treasury Department officials. The revelation was made Thursday by the Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC. The agency has been chasing fraudsters using call centers controlled by the Jalisco drug cartel to offer to buy Americans timeshare property. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. COP28 Climate Summit delegates agree to increase support for a disaster fund, but stark divisions remain over fossil fuels.
We collectively have the power to do something unprecedented. In fact, we have no choice but to go the very unconventional way.
North Africa braces for a dangerously dry future as COP28 gets underway in Dubai. Nigeria boosts military spending, but analysts remain skeptical it will improve security. The U.S. backed further Israeli operations against Hamas. Gambia's government welcomes a German court conviction of a Gambian national accused of committing crimes against humanity.
The verdict is a verdict for justice, and it's a verdict for all freedom-loving people across the world, not only the Gambia. Particularly so for the Point newspaper and the fraternity of journalists in the Gambia and across the globe.
And a new anti-HIV injection could be a game-changer for South Africa. Those story plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The COP28 Climate Summit is underway in Dubai, with divisions being exposed on day one over the planned phase-out of fossil fuels. Scientists say huge and immediate cuts in greenhouse gas emissions are needed, but the summit host, the United Arab Emirates, doesn't want a complete ban on oil and gas, as Henry Richwell reports.
Nearly 200 countries are taking part in the two-week COP28 climate summit, which began Thursday in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, a major exporter of oil and gas. Scientists say delegates must agree on how to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 43% in just the next 6 years if the world is to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels and avoid catastrophic climate change. So central to the talks is the major source of those emissions, the burning of fossil fuels. COP28 President Sultan Al Jaber, also the head of the UAE State Oil Company, opened the meeting with his vision, not a phasing out of fossil fuels, but a phasing down.
We must look for ways and ensure the inclusion of the role of fossil fuels. I know there are strong views about the idea of including language on fossil fuels and renewables in the negotiated text. We collectively have the power to do something unprecedented. In fact, we have no choice but to go the very unconventional way. I ask you all to work together.
That speech prompted anger from environmental groups. Bill Hare is the CEO of Climate Analytics.
We know that what he's pushing for on the phase down is simply window dressing increased oil and gas production.
Divisions over the projected phase-out of fossil fuels could dominate the summit, but there was progress in other areas. The parties agreed a new $420 million fund to help poorer, vulnerable nations cope with the cost of disasters caused by climate change, like droughts, floods and rising sea levels. U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry.
We are obviously pleased with everybody by the early adoption by the parties, which is a great way to start this COP.
The day one deal could pave the way for further agreements at COP28. Tom Rivett-Carnac is a former strategist at the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change.
That will provide developing countries with the confidence that they can now step forward and implement mitigation measures as well.
Delegates hope the momentum continues into the rest of the summit as marathon negotiations loom over the future use of fossil fuels. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
The heavy rains that triggered September deadly floods in Libya are only one side of how climate change is impacting North Africa. The other is drought, issues that will be on the table at COP28 in Dubai. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has the story from Tunis.
Just outside Tunisia's capital, farmer Karim Daoud is radically changing an old family business. He's moving away from milk cows to sheep and goats because they consume less water. He uses drip irrigation and plans for an increasingly dry future.
We are forced to search for water, dig wells at even steeper costs. Agriculture today is experiencing very difficult conditions.
Climate change is shaping Daoud's farming choices. That's not always the case with other growers. Agriculture accounts for more than three quarters of Tunisia's overall water consumption, even as water supplies are dwindling. The country has weathered 5 years of drought, forcing the government to introduce water rationing and driving up prices for Tunisians struggling with an economic crisis. Fruit vendor Monji Gaiji says people can't afford to buy the fruit because it's too expensive. He blames the high prices on the drought.
Le problème est très complexe.
Khawda Gafraj is a Tunisian expert on water management. She says the problem is a very complex one and is linked to the drought, but also to a failure in the current policies for managing the crisis, which she says is multidimensional. Poorly maintained infrastructure accounts for heavy water loss. Development, pollution, food waste, and deforestation are also draining supplies. Tunisia isn't the only North African country facing a drier future. Experts say the region faces high water stress that will only get worse. Gafraj said when the region started to work on climate change, analysts said there would be climate refugees and predicted people would move to urban areas to work or flee Tunisia, Morocco, or Algeria for other countries. Some are turning to old ways of conserving water, like here in Tunis's Medina or Old City. Social entrepreneur Leila Ben Gassem says traditional homes in the Medina or Old City had two water sources. One was a well, and the other was rainwater that was collected. She says these could be important alternatives today.
They could be very important alternative.
Tunisia's government is drafting a water plan and building desalination plants. But experts say there are no simple solutions to a complicated problem. Farmers like Daoud hope next year will bring rain, but they know it's not enough to save their future. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Tunis.
The government of the Gambia welcomes the conviction in Germany of a Gambian national accused of committing crimes against humanity. According to the French news agency, the AFP, Bai Lo was sentenced to life imprisonment on Thursday after being convicted of crimes against humanity, murder, and attempted murder between 2003 and 2006. He was a driver for the Junglers, a Gambian death squad, during the rule of former President Yahya Jammeh. Gambian government spokesperson Ibrahim Asankare tells me that the conviction is a victory for justice and to all freedom-loving people.
The Gambia government is aware of the conviction today in Germany of Bai Lo, a member of the former Junglers, a hit squad under former President Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Lo actually forced went to Germany as a refugee when he himself fled the very dictator he served. Consequently, after the 2016 elections, the international situation changed for all of them, who thought that distance was going to be impunity. So today, the verdict is a verdict for justice, and it's a verdict for all freedom-loving people across the world, not only the Gambia. Particularly so for the Point newspaper and the fraternity of journalists in the Gambia and across the globe. The conviction will go a long way to send a signal to anybody, any perpetrator of crimes against humanity or crimes against people's basic human rights.
Do you hope that this conviction, that more can come out of it for others?
Yes, as of now, two of his other lieutenants or lieutenants also overseas. One is in Switzerland, a very high-profile person himself, Ousmane Sonko, who served both as Inspector General of Police and Minister of Interior, is also standing trial in Switzerland. Also in the United States, another henchman, Michael Sankoria, awaits his trial in the United States sometime in January or September in the new year. So all in all, what this shows you is, in the words of Martin Luther King, that the long arc of justice might be long, but in the end, it just bends towards justice. You know, that the moral arc of the universe is long, but eventually it bends toward justice. And today, justice has been realized in the case of Bailo. And eventually, we will get there.
Tell us again the crime that Mr. Lowe is convicted of committing. I mean, who is he accused of murdering?
Yeah, in particular, he's accused of aiding or abetting in the murder or the assassination of Gambian journalist Dada Haidara on 16th December 2004. He's also accused, among other things, of also aiding in the attempted assassination of a prominent Gambian jurist, Usman Sila, who is now exiled in the United States. Also, Mr. Lowe is accused of aiding and abetting in the murder of one Mr. Nyasi, who was also liquidated by the Jammeh regime. So in summary, those are his crimes. He was tried under the concept of universal jurisdiction. Even though he's not a German citizen, the Germans felt that the crimes were so serious that they could try him.
Ibrahima Sankara is the Gambian government spokesperson. He was speaking with us from the capital, Banjul. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December the 1st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Nigerian authorities say national defense, internal security, and economic stability are the top priorities in the 2024 budget that President Bola Tinubu delivered to lawmakers on Wednesday. Improving security is a major challenge for Tinubu's government as it desperately seeks to attract foreign investments to grow the country's struggling economy. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu presented his $35 billion 2024 federal budget to lawmakers at a joint session of the National Assembly. Under the new budget, authorities allocated about $4 billion or 12% of the total budget to defense and security, the largest single allocation to any sector. In his first budget speech since coming to office, Tinubu told lawmakers that security is important to safeguard lives, property, and investments across the country. Tinubu said he will overhaul Nigeria's internal security architecture to boost performance operations and achieve better results. But experts say Nigerian authorities have consistently increased military spending in recent years without making Nigerians safer and more secure. Kabiru Adamu is an analyst for consulting firm Beacon Security in Abuja.
In the 2023 budget, security enjoyed the largest allocation, and we're seeing the same thing in this current budget that was submitted to the National Assembly. There is, I think, almost about 30 to 40% increase in the provision. But unfortunately, we haven't seen remarkable improvement in the provision of security to equate this attention that government is given in terms of funding. So what is the challenge? I think it has to do with accountability and monitoring the performance of the security sector.
Africa's largest economy faces many security problems, including a 14-year Islamist insurgency in the northeast, separatist violence in the south, often deadly clashes between pastoralists and farmers, and proliferation of kidnap-for-ransom gangs in the northwest and central regions. Tinubu, who embarked on bold economic reforms, including the scrapping of fuel subsidies and removal of foreign exchange restrictions, promised to fix security problems if elected. But this week, local residents in northwest Zamfara State said they are still reeling after armed gangs last Friday attacked their villages and kidnapped more than 100 residents. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The United States is hoping the humanitarian pause between Israel and Hamas can be extended, allowing for more hostages to return home while more aid gets into Gaza. But key officials say once Israel decides to go back to on the offensive, it will have full U.S. support. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
Gunmen opening fire at a bus stop in Jerusalem, killing three. Reason enough for the White House to back further Israeli operations against Hamas.
Just another example of the kind of threat that the Israeli people and the Israeli nation are under.
U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
They'll continue to find support from the United States in terms of the tools and capabilities, the weapon systems that they need.
But while Kirby emphasizes that Israel has both a right and a responsibility to target Hamas, even in southern Gaza, he says Israel must do more to protect Palestinian civilians.
We do not support a move to the south unless or until they have adequately accounted for the protection of innocent human life, civilian life.
Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh says Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has made that clear in repeated calls with his Israeli counterpart. But she adds, ensuring high civilian casualties is part of Hamas's plan.
Hamas is a terrorist organization that embeds deeply within civilian infrastructure and uses civilians as a way of shielding their operations.
Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
There is potential good news this World AIDS Day, December 1st, with a new injection that prevents the development of HIV, showing excellent results in trials. As Kate Butler reports, there are still some obstacles to its further rollout in South Africa. However,
South Africa has one of the highest rates of HIV in the world, with over 7 million people living with the virus. While the country has made significant strides in terms of treatment, with millions of people on antiretroviral medication, there were still about 160,000 new infections last year, according to UN data. A new injectable drug known as pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, offers protection for people at high risk of getting infected. Unlike the already available oral PrEP, which must be taken daily, the shot is only given every 2 months. Linda Gail Becker, CEO of the Desmond Tutu HIV Foundation, says a study of its use in women in Africa showed an 89% reduction in HIV infections in users of injectable PrEP compared to oral PrEP. It could be a game changer for women at risk of contracting HIV, which causes AIDS, because it puts prevention in the hands of the user. Young women are able to take it discreetly without asking their partner to do anything.
So when the injectable PrEP was compared with oral PrEP, it was shown to be far superior in its ability to protect women against HIV acquisition. It is very exciting to have these less frequently dosed, long-acting agents for people who struggle to take treatment daily.
The drug, cabotegravir long-acting, or CAB-LA, has been approved for use in South Africa. While widely available in the United States and Europe, the injectable is still pricey, reportedly costing several thousand dollars a shot.
So we've got two problems in terms of access. The one is just a limited manufacturing capability, and the second is the affordability of this product. The price, we believe, is going to have to come down quite markedly for most low and middle income countries to be able to afford it.
Fortunately, the company producing it has shared the license with the Medicine Patents Pool, a UN-backed public health organization, and granted licenses to three more companies to produce generic versions of the drug. Chuli, a transgender woman living in Cape Town who did not want to give her full name, took part in one of the early trials in South Africa, and those participants are still able to continue accessing it. She said she preferred the injection to the pill.
Actually, I love. I feel like the CAB LA is actually good for me, and it's been working absolutely so good. I feel like just the pills is actually a lot of work for me, since I'm taking the hormones as well.
Dr. John Nkengasong, U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator, told VOA the United States is working with the South African government to introduce CAB-LA.
We find ourselves at an important point in the fight against HIV, where science continues to evolve, innovation continues to bring new tools into the market, and the long-acting PrEP injectables are just one of such examples.
Following the first trials and the drug's approval for use in South Africa, several pilot projects were supposed to be rolled out this year. Those were delayed, but are now expected to get underway in early 2024, Becker says. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with cricket, as Uganda will make their first appearance at the Cricket World Cup next year after qualifying on Thursday for the T20 tournament to be hosted by the West Indies and the United States. A 9-wicket win over Rwanda secured Uganda second place in the African regional qualifying event, joining Namibia at the 2024 T20 World Cup while eliminating Zimbabwe from contention. Uganda bowled Rwanda out for just 65 and knocked off the runs in 8.1 overs to record their fifth win in 6 matches in Windhoek. Brian Musaba, captain of the Cricket Cranes, says the qualification will improve Ugandan cricket going forward.
It's massive for Ugandan cricket. It opens a lot of doorways for us. You know, we've shown the world that we can play. And hopefully that opens doors in terms of facilities and facilitation. And, you know, hopefully get more support from the government. I think we've shown that sports is a viable industry.
And now to canoeing sports. South Africa and Nigeria canoe teams have qualified for the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. The two countries dominated the first Confederation of African Canoe Sprint and Para Canoe qualifiers for the 2024 Paris Olympics at the just concluded qualifying championships in Abuja. South Africa finished first on the medal table with a total of 8 gold medals. And 1 bronze. Host Nigeria won a total of 9 medals, comprising 4 gold, 4 silver, and 1 bronze, while Tunisia came third with a total of 15 medals, 3 gold, 5 silver, and 7 bronze medals. Kim Purple, president of the Canoeing Association of South Africa, said the canoeing sport in Africa is still developing.
It's a fantastic sport. It's very different for Africa, being a water-based sport. You know, we're not used to that. So we have to look at our national Olympic committees. We've got to look at the IOC on the Olympic solidarity and private companies. You know, we've got to go and sell our stories.
In basketball, the NBA Africa has announced that a new subsidiary has been established in Kenya with an office located in Westlands, Nairobi. The NBA Kenya office will support all the league's business and basketball development initiatives in the country. Nairobi becomes NBA Africa's 5th office on the continent, joining Cairo in Egypt, Dakar in Senegal, Johannesburg in South Africa, and Lagos in Nigeria. Inaugurating the new office, the first of its kind in East Africa, NBA Africa held a junior NBA clinic for 70 boys and girls aged 16 and under in Nairobi in the presence of 5-time NBA champion Ron Harper. In football news, football governing body FIFA on Thursday officially published its latest men's national team global rankings. The latest ranking showed a big improvement for Comoros, who made a significant move up the rankings with 30.88 points that moved them 9 places to 119th. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and